here we are again after definitely not having a problem the first time. Nothing happened. Don't ask. It's not for you.
Well, I mean, if anybody was concerned or wondering, I definitely survived Tornado Gate 427 2024 in Oklahoma. Somehow. There was no tornado. Tornadoes hit everywhere that's not where I am.
Don't dox yourself.
But, I mean, it's a big area. But most of northeastern Oklahoma was not affected. But, I mean, like, the Midwest, central Oklahoma is always where it gets hit the worst. But if you're a listener or someone in Nebraska or Joplin, like, why are you even listening to this? I'm so sorry. But we're thinking about you because you guys really got your shit kicked in.
Yeah.
That's really bad in Nebraska right now. They had like 5 F5s on the ground at one time.
Wow. Dude, tornadoes are scary. And I live in like hurricane trajectory most times.
Well, it's because like the reason why I think, at least for me, like having lived on the East Coast, like in Boston and in Virginia, even though we were really far inland in Virginia, is because like there's normally lead up to like be able to prepare for a hurricane and things like that. They normally don't just like develop on the coast immediately. Whereas Oklahoma, yeah. It's like that idea of if all of these perfect climate situations happen at the same time, then you might get a tornado. But it's mm-hmm. not a guarantee you're going to get a tornado. But like yeah. It used to be isolated to just the summer months, like late spring and summer in Oklahoma as far as tornadoes went. And now it's basically like the security guy at my work said that last year there wasn't a single month that didn't have a tornado in Oklahoma.
Damn.
Like they're, but you know, climate global change warming. Is a hoax. Yeah. It's a myth though, guys. Don't worry.
Definitely doesn't exist. Oh, I might need to recruit you. Just FYI. Total left field thing for you.
Okay.
I need to write my bio for my burlesque thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's requiring me to say nice things about myself, and I'm struggling.
Okay, so. Yeah, I'll help however I can.
You and some other friends who may be listening may be pulled into the help Casey write things nice about herself, because she cannot do that on her own. You know what, listeners, if you have anything nice you want to say, you go ahead and you send it in.
I mean, I don't know, you gotta
about either of us.
You got a pretty big compliment a few months ago, I think.
I did. I'm still working on it, bro. All right. Shall we?
We shall.
Welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 188 of our series, seeking out the weird, the unexplained, and the devious from around the world. I'm Casey.
And I'm Roya.
Today, I'll be giving you the much anticipated update on Lori Vallow and the trial of Chad Daybell. Aren't you so excited?
I am.
Okay, great.
These guys
remember, you can find us. You can find us on social media. We are on X, Threads, Instagram, Facebook, and of course, patreon.com/strangeandusual, where we have the James and Elena story as a sort of Lion King 1.5 to this saga. So you can hang out over there for just $2 a month. But there will be more on that at the end of the episode and in the show notes. And why don't we get into this business? Let me tell you about this trial. Wee-woo, murder. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, weird cult shit, preppers and doomsday beliefs, demons, zombies, spirits, the storm, the death penalty, white people in Hawaii, white savioring. I don't think I got to it last time, so just in case, there's going to be some mention of mental illness, developmental disorders with some pretty presumptuous ideas and stigmas surrounding those, bipolar disorder, autism, transphobic slurs, all sorts of things come up in this massive trial, so just getting it all out of the way now. And again, hopefully a final reminder that this story, while we are making jokes, does include the deaths of 2 children, so keep that in mind. I do recommend listening to the first episode we did on this case, episode 123, because it will likely be brought up a lot in what's going on. That was just kind of the here's what happened in this murder, right? For these murders. And I did the 4-part episode on Lori's trial last year, which I believe was episodes 153 through 156.
Sounds about right.
And I will absolutely be referencing back to those episodes. A lot of this a lot of this evidence will be the same. They were intended to be tried together. The prosecution has already told us that a lot of this evidence will be the same. So there's no real point in me telling you all over again the same things I already told you last year when we were doing Lori's trial. So I'll make some references. I will remind you of things, but I'm not going to get into all the same nitty gritty detail unless it's something new or specific to chat. Some additional housekeeping reminders and updates of things that have happened between Chad and Lori's trial last year, which is arguably more interesting than Chad's actual trial. I know previously I had mentioned that Chad and Lori were supposed to be tried together since the state was using the same evidence for both cases, but Chad's attorney, John Pryor, was the one who was able to get these cases severed. And they were not being represented by the same attorney because they are both being charged, Lori was charged, with conspiracy. And so that would pose a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
You can't, if Roya and I were going to commit a crime together.
We're not.
We're both being tried for conspiracy.
FBI agent listening. We're not. NSA agent. We're not.
If I was tried first and my whole thing was Roya made me do it, that attorney could not in good faith turn around and represent Roya and go, Casey made me do it.
Yeah.
Which, spoiler alert, is 1000% what's about to happen, I swear to God. Lori went to trial and was found guilty of 6 out of her 6 charges, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception for the death of Tylee Ryan, first degree murder of the death of Tylee Ryan, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception and the death of JJ Vallow, first degree murder for the death of JJ Vallow, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and the death of Tammy Daybell, which was Chad's former wife, and grand theft for the Social Security benefits of the kids, and guilty on all charges. She was given a life sentence. She made this bonkers statement. I don't remember if we talked about it or if it was just something we discussed in the Discord about how her children were so busy hanging out with Jesus.
I think we did talk about it.
That's my Lori Vallow impression.
I mean, that's about as good as she deserves.
They're in the spirit world. They're very busy. And then she was sentenced, like I said, 3 consecutive life terms. So great. Her lawyer, since the trial, Jim Archibald, filed an appeal asking the Supreme Court to reconsider 16 issues from the trial. The first was, I think it was supposed to be 6, not 16. Yeah, I'm gonna take that one out of there. Consider 6 issues from the trial. Or maybe it was 16, including these 6. I wrote 6. Whether Judge Stephen Boyce erred in finding Daybell competent for the trial after she spent 10 months in a mental hospital. Whether he erred in denying Archibald's request to send Daybell back to the mental hospital rather than proceeding to trial. Whether Daybell's constitutional, or Lori Vallow Daybell, her constitutional rights to a speedy trial were violated by the prosecutor's request for continuances. Whether Judge Boyce erred when he allowed prosecutors to present evidence of crimes in the pending Arizona case concerning the death of Charles Vallow and the attempted murder of Brandon Boudreau. Whether Boyce abused his discretion by sentencing Lori Vallow to serve 3 consecutive fixed life sentences without parole, and whether he abused his discretion by ordering her, indigent, whether Boyce abused his discretion by ordering Lori Vallow, who is indigent and has a public defender, to pay $100,065.18 in fines and court costs. She has to pay $165,000. She couldn't pay for a lawyer, but she has to pay these court costs. In the meantime, she has been assigned a new appellate attorney. His name is Craig Durham. But the appeals process can take several years, and hers may take even longer since she's been extradited to Arizona, where she's being charged with conspiracy to commit the murders of Charles Vallow and Brandon Boudreau. By the way, she's pleading not guilty.
Of course.
Thought you would be shocked to hear that. And she's currently booked in the Maricopa County Jail in Arizona, where she'll tell you that Charles and Brandon are very busy. Stupid bitch. Sorry.
I love your vendetta against Lori Vallow. It's like one of my favorite things.
Like she personally did something to me.
Like you were directly involved in these children's lives or something.
Yeah. So the potential of the death sentence for Lori, as you might recall, had been removed because there was like a whole bunch of evidence turned over late in the game. And there wasn't enough time for her team to go through all of that and maintain her right to a speedy trial. So they said, cool, we'll just take the death penalty off the table. Done. Chad, however, did not waive his right to a speedy trial, and he is still has the potential to receive the death penalty. And that is in part due to the fact, like I said, he waived his right. But also, John Pryor had almost 4 years to go over the evidence for this case. That said, he did try to file a motion to take the death penalty off the table because he said Chad was a co-conspirator and thus less culpable of the crime.
But being a co-conspirator would indicate an equal conspiracy.
That's how I read it. You're co-stars. You're not leading lady and supporting actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote that Lori, quote, set the conspiracy in motion, manipulated both Alex Cox and Chad Daybell, and remained in charge of her plan throughout, end quote. Which I don't think is not true, but I don't think that that means you just are less culpable now.
Yeah.
He said Lori manipulated Chad through the emotional through emotional and sexual control, and Chad was, quote, not going to act without Lori saying so, which is a direct quote from the transcript of her trial.
I mean, and I do believe that.
Yeah.
Like, I do think pretty firmly that if she hadn't been there to push him into doing things, that he probably wouldn't have done any of the things that he did. That doesn't change the fact that he did them, though.
That's something John Pryor's going to say later, and you're going to go, yeah, see? But the problem is that he did. Like, bro. And I also, I would argue that I don't think she would have done anything without his say-so either.
Just I a think perfect it was, storm I think, of crazy.
Yeah. Because I think if he had said, they're not dark, like, we need to figure out something else, that she probably would have been like, oh, yeah, no, we'll just give them up for adoption. Like, I think she would have, if he had guided her in the right direction. But I think they were both influencing each other.
Yeah.
And into this terrible decision.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I? Oh, quote, per the state's own per the state's own presentation of evidence and arguments in the trial of Lori Vallow, Mr. Daybell has lesser culpability than his co-defendant who did not face the death penalty. That's his argument. He shouldn't be up for the death penalty because she wasn't up for the death penalty.
I agree with that.
I don't disagree. Yeah. He called it, quote, unconstitutional and unacceptable for one of them to receive the most extreme punishment available while the other did not, saying, quote, the state has presented evidence and argued that Lori was the leader of the alleged conspiracy and Chad only followed Lori's direction. Pryor wrote, quote, even if all the state's allegations were accepted as true, he is the co-defendant facing the most extreme punishment available. The state's seeking of Mr. Daybell's death is cruel and unusual. And again, I don't disagree.
Yeah, I think that the difference would be if they were able to confirm, like, that he was guilty.
He was the one with the axe in his hand.
Yeah, he's like, the one who actually killed the kids.
We have video evidence of him.
Yeah, like, instead of just, like, we don't really know who killed the kids, but we know that
we know that they were all aware that it happened and nobody reported anything. And
we know that the kids were killed. And but yeah, I could see if there was more to his side of the trial, then I could understand him having a different sentence. But if they're being tried for the same list of crimes, then they should
Well, they're tried for many of the similar, but like, he has insurance fraud and some other things that she did not have.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if the crimes that were really, like, insurance fraud, obviously not great, but the crimes that we're really looking at here of, like, the deaths of the children and the conspiracy to kill others and things like that, mm-hmm. if those are shared between the two of them, then the things that are on the table as far as Lori being found guilty should be on the table for if Chad is found guilty.
I agree. Boyce ultimately denied the motion, however, stating that Chad was asking the court to, quote, preempt the maximum potential penalty of death before the trial jury has undertaken any deliberations about his guilt of the crimes charged or heard any evidence whatsoever. So Boyce was arguing, hey, I only know what we argued for Lori. I don't know what evidence we're going to hear about Chad. Like, they could come out and say, yeah, actually, we do have video of him slaughtering children with an axe. So I'm not going to take it off the table until we get to the point where we have a jury. We are listening to the evidence. He added, quote, it's a jury of one's peers, not a judge, who recommends the imposition of the death penalty for individuals first charged and then duly convicted of crimes eligible for capital punishment in Idaho. To make a pretrial determination about whether Mr. Daybell is more, less, or equally culpable to Vallow, who is now convicted of all charges brought on by the state of Idaho, would require this court to invade the province of the jury and make a premature determination about what facts of Daybell's case, not Vallow's case, are.
That's super fair, though. Because, I mean, that's kind of what the issue that they ran into to throw it way back with Carla Homolka in Canada was that she got immunity from the trial because they didn't realize initially how involved with the crimes she was. Mm-hmm. And so she got away fairly scot-free in comparison when she was just as guilty.
Yep. So he is still eligible for the death penalty. And unlike Lori, Chad wanted a public trial, and Pryor argued for cameras to be allowed in the courtroom. It was said that the primary reason he wanted camera, quote, is for his family in Utah to be able to watch the proceedings. They'd like to be able to view it. Cameras keep everybody honest. They keep the system honest. They keep the witnesses honest. They keep everyone honest, is what Pryor
said. Yeah, because no one's ever lied on camera.
Yeah, nope. Certainly not me. A handful of other Idaho media outlets hired an attorney to argue for cameras to be in the courtroom as well, saying like, hey, we are the public. We deserve a right to hear this trial. So the judge opted to live stream the proceedings with court equipment and certain restrictions in place. So nobody's allowed to bring in their camera and take pictures, but it will be live streamed for everybody to view and to listen to and record, etc. Another update was that in October of 2023, wild to think it was just a few months ago, JJ's remains were finally released to his family. And in December, Tylee's remains were finally released to her family after all this time.
Yeah, so at least they can finally put him to rest properly.
Yes. It's only been five. But I think I talked about this a little bit in the Discord, but in January, after 2 years of being Chad's attorney, Pryor filed to motion a withdrawal because he wasn't qualified to argue a death penalty case and Chad could no longer pay him. There are certain qualifications that an attorney goes through to be death penalty certified, and he attempted to get qualified co-counsel, but that just wasn't happening for him. Chad was declared indigent in January of 2023, which is a term, I said it earlier and I didn't say this, but it's a term that means he is without sufficient income to afford a lawyer for defense in a criminal case. If the court finds a person is indigent, the court must appoint a public defender or another attorney to represent him or her. And not only that, but this is Pryor's first death penalty case. He wrote in his filing, quote, reflecting this complexity and the work required to prepare and try this case, this court has set aside 2 full months for trial, and the prosecution time or team consists of no less than 5 attorneys from 2 county offices, including an out-of-state attorney hired at the taxpayer expense. Remaining on this case would require undersigned counsel to work around the clock, more than full time, for more than 4 months without compensation and without assistance of any other counsel. This motion is made with Mr. Daybell's full consent. Mr. Daybell has requested from me that he be given 2 capital qualified attorneys for his trial. I have made a diligent effort to find a lawyer to assist in this matter for a significant amount of time. The attorney who I located and agreed to try to qualified to get qualified has not yet been approved by the Public Defense Commission. The time for him to be of any assistance to me in preparing this trial is long gone. Because Mr. Daybell is facing the death penalty and has been determined indigent, he is statutorily entitled to the appointment of 2 counsel who are capital qualified at state expense. And just FYI, according to East Idaho News, again, you know I love my buddy, Nate Eaton. In Idaho, a defendant facing a death penalty is allowed to hire private attorneys for their trials, even if they don't have experience in capital cases. But if you are getting a court-appointed attorney, they must be death penalty certified. Hmm. So even though John Pryor isn't death penalty certified, that doesn't mean he's not allowed to be the defense attorney for this case. And since we're having this conversation, the state obviously objected to the motion to withdraw. In the hearing in which Pryor spoke about filing before the judge, he told the judge he didn't want to withdraw from the case. He could care less about the money. To which Judge Boyce says, well, that's not really what your motion says, Mr. Pryor. And yeah. I laughed.
The motion says quite the opposite of that.
Yeah, you literally said, this guy can't pay me. I want off the case. So then Pryor backpedals. He's like, well, yes, yes, I do want to get paid. He felt like he deserved his compensation, but added that the only way to get the above mentioned death penalty certified lawyers that Chad deserved and does deserve, in my opinion, he needed to withdraw for not being compensated. Quote, Mr. Daybell agrees with me that it's not fair that I work for the next 4 months without being compensated. If the court decides to deny the motion, I want to make it clear, Judge, that I'm prepared to go forward and push this case to the end, regardless, and I am committed to that. Do I think it's fair that I don't get paid? No. Do I want to get paid? I absolutely want to get paid for the work that I do. The only mechanism I can think of to allow Mr. Daybell to get two capital qualified attorneys to help him with this case is if I step away and withdraw from the case. So I think that's fair. But don't put in a filing that says one thing. And also, and we'll get to this. All right, no, I'm not going to jump ahead. So Fremont County prosecuting attorney Lindsay Blake, who was on Lori Vallow's trial for the prosecution, she argued against the motion, recalling that during the hearing in January 2023, Pryor asked for additional help. And Boyce said that they would find state funding to pay for another attorney if one was brought onto the defense team. So he even offered, like, because Chad is indigent, that he could bring on a court-appointed capital attorney to work with Pryor, but he could not find one. In a follow-up to that hearing, she mentioned that Chad was asked and essentially waived his right to state-appointed defense. She argued that now, a year later, for the first time, this issue is being brought up that Pryor is not getting paid and would need to work 24/7 to get things done. Quote, now the victim's families have to wait much longer and the state has to absorb additional costs. She said it was frustrating, but she also didn't want to cost the state more money in appeals if Pryor was not prepared for the trial. So she was like, she understood if the court decided to side with Pryor.
Yeah.
But she did mention that he was the one who fought to have Chad's trial severed from Lori's in the first place and was fighting for a continuance because he was waiting additional DNA evidence. And now he had had all this time to attend Lori's trial almost every day. So he was there. He saw what evidence they were going to present.
Yeah.
And so she was arguing basically that he had the benefit of watching the co-defendant's trial, knew exactly how long that trial was, how many witnesses there were, how the prosecution planned to approach the case, and he got a year-long continuance to test aforementioned DNA, only decide later, after Lori's trial, that he wasn't even going to have it tested. Quote, it was very frustrating that we ended up having a continuance and a severance for something that never ended up being tested.
Yeah.
She was also frustrated and confused that Pryor's words in the hearing were so much different than those being put forth in the written motion. It was suggested that this was simply another way, or like a veiled attempt for him to request another continuance a little over 2 months before the trial. It's only 2 months until the trial and he is trying to pull this shit and she's not having it. She points out that the affidavit states that Chad no longer wanted Pryor on the case because he could not pay him, but that in the hearing, Pryor suggesting that Chad does want to keep Pryor on the case and his desire to have a different attorney is something entirely different than Pryor simply asking to withdraw. There's no way for Pryor to be paid as private attorney by the state, nor to have a public defender as co-counsel. He suggests that he does not have the luxury of the state to appoint 5 attorneys and bring in an attorney from out of state on the county dime to help with a non-death penalty case, meaning Lori's case, to help. And so he's arguing that they knew the case would be difficult and they had 6 attorneys on the job while he was doing this case by himself. Ultimately, Judge Boyce agreed with the state and ruled against the motion, and his big thing was timing. Quote, none of this is new at all. The charges have not changed since the indictment. The co-defendant went through the entire trial, which you observed, and knew how long it would take. We talked about this concern a year ago, and here we are on the doorstep of the trial, essentially. And the argument that is not persuasive at all to me is that you're just now learning how much work this is going to take. Judge Boyce is a sassy bitch, okay? Yeah. He said the motion, if granted, would absolutely require a continuance of the trial and not a brief continuance. The court is required to appoint 2 capital qualified public defenders. The issue is that Idaho has a sparse number of death penalty qualified attorneys on the roster, and Idaho is currently experiencing a lot of cases already resulting in appointments of those available attorneys. Quote, and quite frankly, I don't have any idea who would be appointed of the two. I don't know when we could get them appointed, but what I do know is that the trial would have to be vacated and would have to be continued, and I think likely for a long time, maybe a year, maybe even more, as those attorneys would reasonably request to have time to prepare.
Yeah, because they didn't have
Pryor had 4 fucking years to do. And they would need that time to be granted, and it would take even longer. Toward the end, he added, "At that hearing a year ago, there was a representation by Mr. Pryor who said directly to this court," and I'll quote, "What was said at that hearing? Quote, 'There is going to be no continuance because I'm going to get out of it. I'm going to ask to get out of this case. That will not happen.'" Pryor said those words in January 2023, and Boyce had the receipts. He did say that if Pryor could find another lawyer to assist him, the state would help pay the cost, though. So, and just FYI, because we're talking about costs here, East Idaho News reported that Lori's trial cost nearly $1.8 million as of October 2023. And if Chad's trial runs longer, it will cost even more than that. Between 2019 and 2022, Chad and Lori's case cost the taxpayers approximately $3.6 million. Crazy to think about.
Yeah.
So
and that's just a trial,
and yeah,
that's not even like her time spent behind bars and additional trial.
Yep. So anyway, in February, Lori was back in court in Arizona, smiling and tossing her hair in her orange inmate uniform. Her trial is scheduled to begin August 1st, but Judge Justin Bereski mentioned it might not be a realistic start date given the alleged, get this, 20 terabytes of discovery that her attorney Keith Terry has to go through.
What? That's so much data.
They said it was like 80,000 pages or something. And then get this shit. More get this shit. Here's the tea. Pryor, John Pryor, did an exclusive interview with a local news station called KIVI Idaho News 6, where he discussed different aspects of the trial, like whether or not Lori might be called to the stand, or how he met Chad and stuff like that. So Judge Boyce had to issue a non-dissemination order prohibiting, quote, "any party to this case, including the prosecuting attorney, defense attorney, and any attorney representing a witness, victim, or witness or victim's family from making written or oral statements about the case until April 15th or after opening statements have been made." He later extended that gag order to continue through the conclusion of the trial, obviously. And he extended the scope to include investigators, law enforcement personnel, and agents from the prosecuting attorney or defense attorney, essential court staff directly involved. Like, basically, you're not allowed to talk about this case. Nobody's getting an interview except for, like, a victim or a family member. Like, those are the people that press can talk to, basically. But I was like, what a fucking dumbass. Maybe he was hoping for a continuance. All right. So, as one more quick reminder, Chad was arrested on June 9th, 2020, after the remains of Tylee and JJ were found buried on his property. He was indicted by a grand jury in May of 2021 and is being charged with first-degree murder in the death of Tammy Daybell, first-degree murder in the death of Tylee Ryan, first-degree murder for the death of JJ Vallow, conspiracy to commit murder for Tammy Daybell, conspiracy to commit murder and grand theft by deception for the death of Tylee Ryan, conspiracy to commit murder and grand theft by deception for the death of JJ Vallow, as well as insurance fraud. So he pleaded not guilty to all charges. Also, even though these crimes were committed in Fremont County in the east portion of Idaho, Pryor got the trial moved to the western part of the country, or the country, to the state in the county of Ada, arguing that publicity would affect the availability of a fair and impartial jury.
Fair.
It's expected to last 8 to 10 weeks. And like I think at time of the recording, we are on day 12, or we've just had day 12 of this trial. So Judge Stephen Boyce is still the judge on the case. He's the same judge that we had for Lori's trial. The lead prosecutors for the state are Fremont County Prosecuting Attorney Lindsay Blake and Madison County Prosecuting Attorney Rob Wood. They are the two leads that were on Lori's case as well. But the out-of-state attorney Rachel Smith from Missouri left the case, and in her place, they appointed Deputy Attorney General Ingrid Beatty from the Idaho Attorney General's office. And they will no doubt be assisted by deputy prosecuting attorneys, as they were last time. But after that long slog, let's get into the actual trial so far, sort of. On the Friday before the jury selection was slated to begin, a lawyer by the name of Terry Ratliff filed a motion to delay the trial through the court's e-filing portal.
Why?
That's a great question, Roya. Nobody fucking knows. Terry Ratliff doesn't fucking know. The motion was sealed by Judge Boyce, and the trial's attorneys were instructed to not talk about it. In that order, it reads, quote, on March 29, 2024, at 11:42 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, non-party presented for filing its motion, spelled with an E, to intervene and to continue, C-O-N-T-I-U-E, continue, the trial in these proceedings.
So he was drunk.
Proceedings. Proceedings is, I guess, how you would say it.
Sounds to me like he had been drinking.
Yeah. It goes on to say, quote, the court will temporarily seal the motion pending further review until such time as the court can call for a hearing of determination of whether the motion will remain sealed or be unsealed and set the substance of the motion for the hearing. But that will be important later. So for real now, the jury selection began on April 1st, 2024. It took 5 days to select the jury. They anticipated it could take up to 2 weeks, but it only took them 5 days. They had a pool of 50 people by the end of their first round. So they went through the peremptory challenges, which in a little mini baloney moment, I'll tell you, is where the prosecution and defense go through and exclude potential jurors without having to give a reason why. They each get 16. They go, I didn't like number seven's hair. He's gone. Like they can. That's not what they're going to say. They're going to say, oh, this woman or this man doesn't have any kids. You know, he's probably not going to side with us when he sees these dead kids, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they each got 16 to decide what they're not looking for in a juror, which leaves the pool at 18. Eight women and 10 men, same as Lori's trial, weirdly enough. And most of them were not adamantly opposed to the death penalty. I think there was one who was like kind of I would rather not sort of guy.
Yeah.
And as in Lori's trial, there will be 12 jurors and 6 alternates that will be decided at the end of arguments. They were told to avoid the media and were given the same types of instruction as the jury was in Lori's trial. Not to talk about the case, not to look into the case. Don't even think about the case when you're not here. Like,
yeah,
don't breathe on the case. Larry and Kay Woodcock, who are JJ's grandparents, of course, will be there. Larry was interviewed after the jury selection was complete and said that the trial was so much less stressful for him because they had trusted and loved Lori, but they didn't really know Chad. So they had already seen and heard the worst.
Yeah.
Larry Woodcock said, quote, I look at Chad and I don't look at Chad. I look at the photographs that I saw of JJ, the remains of Tylee and Tammy. For what? And that was what he said. Evidently, Larry walked up to John Pryor and asked how he was doing on that first day because of the gag order, John Pryor was basically like, I can't talk to you. And Larry patted his back and said, good luck. And I like to think that it was a little sarcastic, but Nate Eaton said, no, he is genuinely just like he went up and like he wants a fair trial.
Yeah.
And he just believes that it will go their way because the evidence is there. And like he said, it was a big thing for them that Lori was tried because of that betrayal. They trusted and loved her. Yeah. She was a member of their family. In this trial, that betrayal and all of those heavy feelings and fears really belonged to Tammy's family, who didn't know Lori and so didn't have a big stake in her trial. Many of them were subpoenaed, though, so they can't just attend the trial because unless you're considered a witness, you're not allowed to be in there while other witnesses unless you're considered a victim, you can't be in listening to other witness statements because it could bias your own statement. Chad's parents are noticeably absent and have not had anything public to say, as far as I'm aware. So that's
pretty telling.
Something I wasn't really expecting, yeah. And in the several pretrial hearings that Chad has attended, it is noted that he is not smiling. He is not tossing his hair. Like Lori, he has said very little and hasn't been showing any real emotion at all. And let me tell you, that man has the thinnest lips on the fucking planet. He looks like he is supposed to be wearing dentures and he's not, because he always is like mean mugging and it's like his little tiny lips just pushed together. Not that I'm making fun of anybody's appearance, but this guy just looks so grumpy all the time, which I guess I would be too if I was on trial for killing children.
We can make fun of Chad and Lori. It's okay.
I think so too.
Yeah. It's like we made fun of Denny.
Dennis. So the trial got underway on Wednesday, April 10th, with Nate Eaton describing Chad as, quote, sitting stone-faced, wearing a blue shirt and blue tie, which I wrote about later. I think it's so interesting that he wore a blue shirt. He's only ever seen in a white shirt leading up to this point. But it's one of those things they tell you is like when you're in a job interview, you should wear blue.
Hmm. Just because it's like a relaxing color?
I think I wrote it in a different spot. Hold on. Blue. Oh, yeah. So, Cornell University's Career Center says the color implies, quote, you are trustworthy, honest, and credible. So I'm wondering if that was like maybe a part of the strategy, was like, if you know that that color elicits certain emotions of trustworthiness and like credibility.
Yeah.
That you start your trial wearing blue. I don't know. It could be nothing. It could just be me going, I wonder, but you know. I moved my notes and now I gotta find it again.
I mean, I think that there is like some precedent for color theory as far as like different situations go, like kitchens being painted red and,
yep,
you know, like almost never being painted green.
Mm-hmm.
And like just different things like that. Like even into
McDonald's.
Even in
their red and yellow.
Yeah, even into like branding. Like you go and mm-hmm. you look at like bread brands at the grocery store and you like almost never find any that are branded with green or blue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because of the association with mold.
Yeah. So I read that he had only been wearing white up until this point and suddenly wore a blue shirt and I went, that motherfucker. He knows something and I don't like that he knows something. Nate also reported that Larry and Kay were in attendance, as well as Vicky Hoban, which is Tammy's aunt. And a couple of the jurors from Lori's case
uh-huh.
are showing up to these, like, to see what's going to happen on the other end of it, I guess.
Yeah.
One of them is writing a book, or has written a book, about his experience as a jury member on her trial. And I'm kind of curious to read it.
Blame him.
What's that?
I said, I don't blame him.
Oh, yeah. Get that dough. Get that bread, yo.
So I know fucking jury duty doesn't pay jack.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might be more on this level, but
I don't think it is.
I've been called to jury duty. It didn't pay shit.
You know what I did find out, though? As a government employee, if I get called for jury duty, I can turn in that check and they'll just pay me for a day of work.
Oh.
I turn in the check as my, like, yeah, I went. Here's my proof that I went to jury duty. And then they'll pay me for my day. I don't know if it's the whole day or if you just get the time that you were supposed to be in jury duty, but I found that out the other day, which I didn't know. But I've never been called to jury duty, so I probably will never know. I'm going to be one of those people who never gets to go.
I've been called twice.
So with that out of the way, I'm going to tell you about opening statements, and then I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up, and we'll get started on testimony next time. But Rob Wood began opening statements with a mic in his hand, and he stood in front of the jury with a PowerPoint presentation. And Lindsay Blake was the one who did opening statements in Lori's trial. So I think it's interesting that the woman opened for the woman's trial and now the man is opening for the man's trial. So I don't know if there was any strategy in that either. But his opening line was, two dead children buried in the defendant Chad Daybell's backyard in September of 2019. The next month, his wife is found dead in their marital bed. 17 days after the death of his wife, Tammy Daybell, this defendant is photographed laughing and dancing on a beach in Hawaii at his wedding to Lori Vallow, a woman who was his mistress and the mother of the children buried in the graves on his property. Which, like, all right, bro, open it. Like, say what you want to say. Like with Lori, the theme the prosecution presents is a story of sex, money, and power, and how Chad, quote, craved significance so much so that it led to the death of two children and his wife, and how he'd let nothing get in his way. Wood talks about how Chad was an author, and so he tells this opening statement in 9 chapters. So he's like chapter 1, and he brings up how Chad met and married Tammy and how well loved Tammy was. And in chapter 2, it's Lori and the affair. And on another one, he mentions the James and Elena story and dark spirits and zombies and how Tylee, JJ, and Tammy were all considered obstacles. Quote, the evidence will show that it was a convenient narrative to dehumanize people who stood in their way and were labeled as obstacles. This narrative gave them the pretext to remove people from the world for their own good.
Yeah.
He introduces Alex Cox, and mentions how he was, quote, manipulated with the promises of spiritual rewards. He talks about the blessing that was given after the deaths, where Chad says, you have already assisted us in ways that can never be repaid. He mentioned what Alex did, the text between Chad and Lori citing Alex as the one who could implicate them in the event that something went down. And he talked about how Alex expressed to his wife Zulema, that he was worried that he would be their fall guy. Rob Wood touches a little bit on the insurance, but it was a lot of stuff that we've heard before. Again, I'm not going to go super into it, but he ends with, quote, two dead children buried in this defendant's backyard. The next month, his wife is dead in their bed. 17 days later, this defendant married Lori Vallow. Members of the jury, days or probably weeks from now, when this trial is fully unfolded, we will have the opportunity to speak with you again. And at that time, we will ask that you end this horrible narrative. Your verdict will be the link that writes the final chapter of this tragic saga. A chapter that delivers justice for Tammy, justice for JJ, and justice for Tylee.
It's effective.
What was that?
So that's effective.
Yeah. And it only took about 22 minutes, which is relatively short when you consider what most opening statements are in these kinds of trials. And what's notable is that in Lori's trial, they were showing autopsy photos of the kids and Tammy, like, right off the bat. In Lindsay Blake's opening statement, they were showing these dead bodies. Rob Wood's statement did not have that. He had a PowerPoint going up of photos of them, but not the autopsy photos, not the remains.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the strategy was there, but I thought it was interesting that that was a difference. And then, lastly, we'll get into John Pryor's opening statement. Also fairly short. I think this one came in around 18 minutes. And he also chose to hold the mic and speak directly to the jury. He introduces himself, tells them he's too old to produce a video presentation like the prosecution did. And he immediately just goes into the spiel about facts and evidence. He doesn't really say shit about Chad's character, which is probably the smart move. Quote, the judge gave you an instruction not to be distracted by speculation. Don't be distracted by guesses or assumptions or hunches. It all comes down to facts and evidence. He introduces Chad a little bit. He talks about meeting Tammy, their marriage, the children, the publishing company. What he does do is he talks major smack about Lori. And like there were comments like, wow, that didn't take him long to throw her under the bus. Like immediately. He specifically mentions at one point that Chad, before meeting Lori, had only ever had a speeding ticket. But Lori, it's like she's had four husbands. She's been divorced this many times. She has a weird relationship with her brother. Which she did, and how Alex was this violent man and he would do whatever Lori asked him to, which wasn't untrue, and how Chad was not being charged with anything that happened to Charles Vallow or Brandon Boudreau, so clearly he is the innocent party. So this whole angle was that this beautiful, vivacious, sexual Mrs. Texas came into Chad's life with her freaky little brother, only 7 year old, like manipulated him to get what she wanted, and Chad just quote fell into this relationship. He had no power. He couldn't help himself. He was being manipulated. He also like tries to point out that Chad had 4.5 acres of land, like suggesting that Chad might not have known that Alex was burying bodies on his property. Like, you literally send a text message to your wife about how you buried a raccoon the day after Tylee was last seen, bro.
Yeah,
we know what you did. We have the receipts. But yeah, so he talks about that. And then there, you know, I'm watching the live stream. So there were people in the comments like, I have 6 acres and I can definitely see what's happening across my property.
Yeah, like, 6 acres isn't that big.
It's not that big. Yeah.
Unless it's like super, like you've got like a cabin and densely wooded
area.
Acres.
Yeah, no.
Like
they called this a farm. So it was clearly a cleared out area. Yeah. Because you use all of your, as we know from Stardew Valley, if you have a certain amount of land, you want to use that as efficiently as possible.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I've seen houses in the town, like, you know, not directly in the city, but mm-hmm. just outside of where I live that's more rural, that's definitely six acres or more that you can see straight yeah. across. Because it's ranch land, yeah. you know?
My grandmother lives on a mountainside, but she has several acres and you can see from one end to the other. Like, anyway.
Yeah, if it was like 400 acres, then sure.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, even 40 4.5 acres. But yeah, 4.5 acres? Nah, get out of here.
Get out of here.
Then you're super unobservant. You're just not looking. At that point, you're actively not looking outside, which is yeah. also suspicious.
What, Alex like, is here? I better get really busy doing something else.
Like, get really busy doing something in a room with absolutely no windows.
No windows. I'll be in the basement if anybody needs me.
Be taking a shower for 3 hours.
Yep. Definitely not going to help because I definitely don't have any experience as a grave digger. Yeah. So also another big thing that's different from Lori's trial is that Pryor tells the jury in his opening statement that he plans on calling people to testify on behalf of the defense. So he learned from the mistakes of Archibald and Thomas of just going, I think we're good. Like, probably not how it should have gone. So he tells them he's bringing in a DNA expert from Boise State who's basically going to talk about how none of the DNA that was found belonged to Chad. He's bringing in a forensic pathologist who plans on testifying that there's no indication of homicide in the death of Tammy Daybell, and that the only thing you can discern from her second autopsy is that you can't discern how she was killed, or how she died, rather. So he plans on having some of the Daybell children testify on behalf of the defense for the health of their mother, how she did not want to see a doctor, how she did have ailing health, and that she died of natural causes because she did things like take supplements instead of medicine. And lastly, he's bringing in a digital examiner who will be discussing the movements of specifically Alex Cox, not Chad Daybell, from what I understand, and a forensic anthropologist who plans on discussing how not all of Tylee's remains were found and what that means. Again, he reminds the jury that they have to hear all of the evidence before coming to a decision. And a side note, because I know it was distracting to me, but I did want to mention that within his 18-minute speech, he says, "You're going to hear testimony," like 20 times. I was super annoyed. I was super annoyed and distracted. And I literally went back and listened to it again so I could count the number of times he's like, "You're going to hear testimony about that. Like, you're going to hear testimony that blah, 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 blah."
They need a little counter.
Yeah. Like, I was like, Jesus Christ, dude, we know. We get it. I'm so glad that I'm going to be hearing testimony. Like, thank you so much. What do we think I'm fucking doing here, bro? So again, Tammy's aunt, Vicky Hoban, was talking to Nate Eaton during the lunch break, and she said she was sad to hear that her nieces and nephews might be testifying for the defense. We all know from Lori's trial that Tammy's sister, Samantha, said in that trial that Tammy hadn't seemed ill to her at all or had not mentioned being ill. And when she last saw her, she was doing really well and looked great. So that will be interesting to see how her her testimony differs from that of her nieces and nephews, what the kids say.
Yeah.
So then after that, they came back from lunch and the first witness was called to the stand. Was not Kay Woodcock this time, but Detective Ray Hermosillo from the Rexburg Police Department, which we will get into next time.
All right.
But boy howdy, this defense attorney is way different from Jim Archibald and John Thomas.
Already, yeah.
Yeah. He's objecting to everything. I want you all to beware, if you watch this, you are going to get so fucking annoyed with this dude. And you're like, this guy's doing his job, but I really would just like the trial to proceed. like, I appreciate somebody who is working against the cops, but at the same time, can we move it along?
Yeah.
it's hard as a listener because, like, I'm not fighting for this guy's life, obviously. And I hate the police, but, like, come on.
Yeah, you're in this weird, like, liminal zone of wanting him to get like the punishment that he deserves, but also not wanting to agree with the police.
Yes, it's weird. It's a weird thing being a leftist person with a true crime podcast, because you're like, man, fuck that killer, but also fuck the police. Nobody here is a winner. We all suck. The end.
Yeah,
but I'm curious. That's where we're at so far.
Curious to see what all comes of it, and what if it ends up with a different result or not.
I am too, especially like I said, I think the way he's pushing facts and evidence in his opening statement, the fact that he's bringing in alternate people to say something different from what the prosecution is going to say, which he already knows what they're going to say because he's seen it already once before. Yeah. Like, where is the jury going to end up on this one? I think it might take more time for them to come to a decision, perhaps. I'll be interested to see. But again, we are up to day 12. I am only up to day 2 or 3 in notes, so I don't want to. I've been going for an hour already, and my throat's starting to give out on me.
Yeah.
It starts sounding like B. Arthur soon. So we'll stop there for today. But next time, we'll get into the nitty gritty.
Thanks for joining us today as we discussed the events leading up to Chad Daybell's trial. Now we want to hear from you. Send your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeunusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you're sending a story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so you can sort through those a little more easily. Do you have any connection to the Daybell crimes? or the Valor of Crimes, that would be really interesting. Casey would love to hear from you.
I would love to hear from you. I mean, honestly, I would be interested to hear your take on, like, what your theories on the differences of strategy are here. If you have any hot takes on that, if you think that there's something that Pryor's going to try to pull, having seen Lori's trial, knowing what their cops are going to bring to the table.
I mean, I think that he very clearly saw that what her attorneys did not work. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't go fully opposite of what they did and, like, might overcorrect.
Because they were doing a lot of, like, Lori was a good mother. Like, bro.
On what planet?
Yeah. The planet that her god is going to give her when she dies, evidently.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's that. You can also find us on Instagram, Threads, at Strange Unusual. I'm going to start over.
Okay. Do you want me to do it?
You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at Strange_Unusual_Podcast or on our personal accounts, Roya Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on X at _Strange Unusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roya Rampage. We're on Facebook. Just search for the Strange Unusual Podcast. And as always, Roya is streaming her games and shit over on Twitch, twitch.tv/RoyaRampage. You can join her over there. And sometimes I'm there too, occasionally. If you'd like, you can join us over on patreon.com/strangeunusual. It's $2 a month. You get access to bonus episodes, our Patreon exclusive Discord. We do poll episodes every month. And what else do we do?
We have some bonus episodes. We have
bonus episodes. That's what it was. Extra content you can access there. But as we know, things are expensive. Life sucks. Capitalism is hell. And so if you can't afford to pay us money because you like us, support us financially, then we would just ask that you like, rate, subscribe, review, share us with your friends, share us with your enemies, share us with your capital certified lawyers. Let them know that we're out here doing the Lord's work.
We're trying.
Otherwise, if you review us with a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, we will read your review out loud. Whether it's mean, whether it's nice, as long as it's got 5 stars and isn't racist or disgusting, we'll read it.
Let me check and see.
I don't think we do either.
Nope.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go drink some water.
Okay. Bye.
I should have done a warm up first.